KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
You know, my time was coming up where, okay, it's time to make another decision. And I got my degree in sociology, so after basketball, whenever that was, I wanted to do something to help kids. And then I realized I couldn't play anymore. I said, okay, what can I do to help kids but stay involved in the game I love? And then I just put the two together, and, you know, that's what coaching is.
And our guest this week is Darris Nichols. He is the new head men's basketball coach at LaSalle University, joining the Big Five, former head coach at Radford. And Darris, thanks so much for coming in.
Matt, appreciate you having me.
So first of all, as we are recording this, I think we're about 48 hours removed from your introductory press conference. What's life been like for the last week or so?
You know, before the press conference, it was crazy. You know, just trying to get organized, trying to make sure I go out of Radford University the right way, you know, saying my goodbyes to a lot of people that helped me during my time there, support. And, you know, just the transition. A lot of people don't understand how much goes into it. And you're trying to transition in a time where college basketball is the most hectic time of the year. So it's been crazy. It's slowed down a little bit now, though, but it was wild.
Why was this the right job at the right time for you?
For me, I think it's just, I want to continue to build, you know, Radford University. You know, it's my hometown, so it's a tough decision. But the Atlantic 10, the conference it's in, you know, the energy that Dr. Allen, the president, and Ash Bori, the athletic director, have towards, you know, making LaSalle a better program, you know, that's what attracted me to the job. And, you know, I said it in a press conference, like, in this day and age where you got NIL and money and everybody's talking about money, you know, people still help you win. And those two guys, you know, the leadership that they have, I was really attracted to. And I believe that we can win at LaSalle.
You mentioned hometown, Radford.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times coming home for the job is the last step.
Right.
And so I would imagine, and you kind of reference this, that added another level of, you know, emotion what is already a big life decision.
For sure. And it's been crazy because obviously my older brother's on my staff. He's on my staff at Radford as well. And in this profession, the biggest thing you sacrifice is family. You know, family time, you don't get to see family as much as, you know, you would like. And so, you know, that's what we had at Radford. And for him to come along with me, you know, that's special. And I think the biggest thing is, over all the years, you know, I've been in Northern Kentucky, you know, Wofford, Louisiana Tech, Florida. You know, homes become where the ball bounces. You know, I tell people all the time, like, if you're a basketball coach, you're gonna move a lot. And that's how I feel now. Like, so I wanted to take a situation, and it's crazy because, you know, you're in a major city of Philadelphia. But, you know, when I got embraced by the LaSalle alums, the fans, stuff like that, it feels like a family feel, small family feel in a major city. So, you know, that made me feel at home.
And you mentioned your brother being able to have him on staff. I would imagine that helps kind of accelerate a lot of transitions because you've got somebody with you that knows your vision immediately and can kind of act like, you know, your right arm when you're trying to do the stuff that people don't see when it's the building blocks of putting a staff together, schedule, recruiting, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it was harder when I first got the Radford job because you're trying to coach the players, but you're also trying to coach the staff on, you know, how you are, your expectations, your philosophy, all of that stuff. So everybody's new. So now when I get this job, you know, I hired my brother who, you know, understands our philosophy, all this stuff. Safet Castrat, who was with me at Radford, who then went to LaSalle. Now I brought him back. You know, James Herring, who's on my staff at Radford. So I feel like I'm in a position right now where I'm not having to coach them on what we want to get accomplished.
What should LaSalle folks, what should Philadelphia basketball folks expect from your team, your program?
You know, the two things I don't stand for is soft and selfish. I don't want to see that product on the floor. And in our evaluation, you know, when we're watching guys in the portal, the biggest thing for us is just finding guys who already play hard, who are already tough. This climate, you only have guys for maybe six, 7 months. The basketball season, then they're gone. So you got to find those guys that already play how you want to play. And the biggest thing is, like, in the Big South, we were always one of the tougher teams. And defensively, we've always been, you know, first or second in the league. That's how we operate. So I think the biggest thing that you'll see is just a tough group of guys that want to play together.
You spent 4 years as the head coach at Radford. Mm-hmm. You talk about having guys for 6-7 months.
Yeah.
How different in just the 4 years has the idea of putting a team together changed? How you approach putting a team together changed?
It's changed a lot. Like, I remember when I first got the Radford job, like, I walked in my press conference with a mask on. Like, we were still coming out of COVID. And we had games canceled my first year because of COVID. And, you know, that was just a few years ago. So I remember it was the second to last job filled in that cycle. So I did my press conference, had individual meetings with the players the next day, and then they went home for the summer, and I didn't see them to the end of June. So you think, like, the transfer portal wasn't like it is then. So you didn't have as much roster turnover. So year one, I kept all the guys, like, because I didn't have an opportunity to see them play or anything. So, you know, you fast forward now, you get a job, and I tell guys, like, it's probably smart for everybody to go in the portal, especially when there's a coaching change, because I want guys that are at LaSalle because they believe in us and what we're doing. I don't want you to say, oh, yeah, I'm coming back before weighing all your options. I want it to be their decision, because if it's not going to pan out. You know, they're going to second guess in the middle of the season when things get hard. They're going to say, OK, what was behind door C? And so it's just a different climate. We're better off telling, you know, the country who's staying instead of who's leaving, you know, so many guys in the portal. So it's just changed in just 4 years, like, tremendously.
I think it was the coach at Norfolk State who basically said that everybody outside of, like, the power conferences, you basically have to almost approach things as a junior college now. Is that the mindset? Yeah. Like, there is no setting a foundation and thinking, well, in 3 years, this kid could be a contributor. Like, you're just kind of year to year.
Yeah. When I go into it evaluating, I never say, okay, I think this player can be good for us in year two. I don't go into the mindset, because they're probably not going to be there if they don't have, you know, a great opportunity in year one. So when I'm recruiting guys, you know, the question you hear, am I going to play a lot? Am I going to start? My impression when I'm recruiting you is that you have a chance to start, because the time, like, you have to develop players, they're not there long enough. You know, they're not there long enough. So when we go into the mindset of recruiting, we're thinking, can they help us win in year one?
Has the skill set needed to be successful in recruiting completely changed, or is it just the message and what you look for has changed?
I think the decision making on the recruits, you know, the decision, like, when you go into the portal, it's kind of like speed dating. You know, it's just like, I got to get to know this player fast. I got to call. I got to get intel. It's kind of like, you're kind of like an NBA front office, but NBA front offices, they get to evaluate these players over years. And, you know, get intel, get feedback from different people. We're doing it in a few days because, you know, those kids are setting up visits. They have other options. So we're calling other college coaches saying, OK, how was so-and-so for you? So the hardest part is trying to get the intel and the correct intel as fast as possible. So then you can make better decisions on if that player fits who your program wants to be.
How much were you familiar with the Big Five prior to, I don't want to say getting the job, but prior to entertaining that this might be a possibility for you?
I knew how special it was to, you know, the people in Philadelphia. Like, I like just hearing about it, being a basketball junkie, you watch it, you understand how much it means to people in the city, especially, you know, from grassroots high school on up. And it's just, you know, just bragging rights. Man, I think it's special when a lot of these guys are probably playing against each other in the summertime and pick up games and stuff like that. And then, you know, to put it on the national stage, I think it's really special. And I went to the, you know, the Coaches vs. Cancer breakfast at the Palestra, and I was just walking around the concourse. I caught myself spending more time on the concourse than actually, you know, down at the breakfast, just because of the history on the walls and, you know, it's really special when you look back and see how many people have come through the Big Five.
And you're taking over for a Big Five legend, yeah. Fran Dunphy, who decided to step away from coaching after a couple of years at LaSalle, obviously a legend at Penn and at Temple. How much conversation have you had with him to get a feel for, you know, what the LaSalle community's like, what the Philadelphia basketball's community's like, and as much as you feel comfortable sharing, what have those conversations been like?
Yeah, and Coach Dunphy's been great. You know, he calls me, picks up my calls, you know, he's trying to help. You know, he wants LaSalle to do well. And the biggest thing, I haven't got a chance to, like, just sit down and just talk to him, but the phone calls have been more so, okay, what do you think about the roster? What are some different things that, you know, we could be doing, all of those things. I haven't really got to, you know, talk to him about, okay, just the overall aspect of, you know, being in Philly, playing in the Big Five, all those things. But we'll get to it. It seems like I run into him everywhere. Like, he's all over the city. So it's good that he still wants to be involved and help us out in the transition in the program.
So now let's talk a little bit about your background. Was basketball your number one sport growing up, or were you doing everything?
At an early age, I was doing everything. You know, I was playing football, tried to play a little baseball, but quit when they took the T away in T-ball. Couldn't do that. But basketball, you know, that's, you know, it's a family game. My dad played. My dad was my high school coach growing up playing against my brother. So, you know, I've always been involved in the game. So it's just family game.
When did you start to realize you were pretty good?
Probably around the time I was 11. And, you know, coming from a small town, you know, you're the best one in the city. Then, you know, we go to Roanoke and I'm playing on a travel team in Roanoke. And then we play in the AAU Nationals and we're playing against the Atlanta Celtics. And I realized, okay, yeah, I'm the best in my town, but, you know, it's a lot of good players out here in the country. And I look back, and we finished 11th in the country that year. And I look back, and the team we lost to was Atlanta Celtics. They had Dwight Howard and all those guys. And I'm just like, okay, that's why that team was pretty good. So right around, like, around 11 or 12, yeah.
Having your dad as a coach, did that plant a coaching seed in you, you think? Did you realize it at the time?
I didn't realize it at the time. I was like all the kids now. I thought I was going to play in the NBA. It didn't work out. You know, played when I was playing at West Virginia. Then I went overseas. I got hurt. And then, you know, my body just wasn't feeling right. I knew that, you know, my time was coming up where, okay, it's time to make another decision. And I got my degree in sociology. So after basketball, whenever that was, I wanted to do something to help kids. And then, you know, I realized I couldn't play anymore. I said, okay, what can I do to help kids but stay involved in the game I love? And then I just put the two together, and, you know, that's what coaching is.
Why West Virginia when you were looking at colleges?
So John Beilein, who I played for the first 3 years, he was at the University of Richmond when I was in ninth grade, and they were recruiting me. He stayed consistent with it. And then he left Richmond and got the job at West Virginia. And he continued to recruit me. And they were just, you know, they were just diligent. They were detailed in my recruiting. I felt wanted and needed. And so I committed there back in those days. I committed as a junior, which is, you know, fairly early. And, you know, it was a great decision. Just the way they handled my recruitment, I felt at home.
John Beilein and then Bob Huggins.
My senior year.
Is your coach your senior year. I'm just curious because Bob Huggins can be a polarizing figure for people. What was that transition like? Because that's, you know, I don't know either gentleman, but from the outside, that seems like a much different personality.
Totally different.
Okay, so what was that like to go from one to the other?
For me, you know, so I was a junior, transitioned to my senior year. And so for me, it was easy. Two different philosophies, two different styles. But I was at the age where I've seen so much college basketball, I felt I could play in any style. Now, if that happened earlier in my career, it may have been a little more difficult. But, I mean, Huggs was great. He made us feel like we were his guys. There were no transfer portals, so I couldn't just up and leave at my senior year. If I left, I had to sit out. So he did a good job of coming in and making us, you know, believe he recruited us for all those years. So I think at the time when there was a coaching change, I thought it was like the worst thing that could have happened. Looking back on it now, I think it's the best thing because I've been through it as a player. Obviously, I know what these guys are going through because, guys are experienced a coaching change at Radford and LaSalle now. So it was he's who you see on TV, exactly who you see. So I appreciated that, and we respected that he didn't change up on us.
Just as an aside, I'm sure you would have liked to have gotten NIL money. Everybody would. Do you think you would have enjoyed college basketball as a player if it was in today's landscape? Or I shouldn't say enjoy, but how much different do you think your college experience would have been?
I probably would have liked it. But would it have prepared me for what the real world is? And that's the question, you know. And I tell our guys all the time, this is nothing like the real world. Like college basketball, I call it, I said it's a utopia. Like a lot of things that go on, and I'm not saying this wrong, but it's not what you're going to experience in the real world. So I think a lot of things that I went through in college prepared me better for what I'm going to experience. Like, for example, I tell my guys all the time, you know, I felt like we were always waiting on a check, our scholarship check. We didn't have cost of attendance. We didn't have the Austin money that the guys get now. So we were just always waiting for a check. I remember sitting at CC's Pizza and we didn't have our check yet. Me and Rob Summers, who's now the associate head coach at Missouri, we sat in there all day because we could eat the $5 buffet. You know, it's like having to figure out things. And that's what life is about, figuring things out. Like, that's what you had to do. We were just trying to have enough money to go out on the weekend. Now you see these guys, they're flying to Miami. They're flying to L.A. because they have all this NIL money. And then you get into the real world. Like, there's a lot of guys that are making money, more money now in college. And then when they, get offered a deal to go overseas, it's less money.
Mm-hmm.
So now what is their decision-making telling them? I'm not going to go. I was making more money than that last year, so they're turning down jobs. And eventually you have to start all over to work your way up.
Yeah.
So that's the hard part about it.
Yeah, it can warp your perception of how things are supposed to work.
Exactly.
So at West Virginia, you guys had success, I think, Sweet 16 as a senior?
Two Sweet 16s, Elite Eight, and NIT Championship.
What are your favorite memories? Are they games, moments, or are they locker room, bus ride, plane rides, just hanging out?
On good teams, it's always, outside of the games. And I think that's what makes really, really good teams. And we were close, really connected. I mean, we're still in the group chat today, and we talk every day in the group chat. And you look at some of the guys that were on those teams, and I always say, like, success leaves footprints. And as a player, you know who's going to be successful in life based off their daily habits. Like, sometimes you have a good player who has terrible habits, and then when that ball stops bouncing, what's going to happen? You know, that's when we talked about earlier, the real world kicks in. But you go on down the line, like, the guys that are still involved in the game of basketball on our teams, like, you know, Joe Mazzulla, head coach of the Boston Celtics, Mike Gansey, the general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mentioned Rob Summers, who's assistant at Missouri. Frank Young is assistant at Appalachian State. Johannes Herbert is over the German Basketball Federation. Like, I can go on down the line, but they were really, really good players, and they were also great teammates. So, you know, if you're a great teammate, you have a chance to be successful in life.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Darris Nichols in just a few moments. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HRV. Contact your local Honda dealer today. See dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with the new head men's basketball coach at LaSalle University, Darris Nichols. So after West Virginia, you mentioned overseas, I think Hungary?
Yeah, I was in Hungary.
And played a handful of games, and then you got hurt.
Yep.
What was, just before we talk about the basketball and the injury, like, kid from Virginia who played his college ball not too far away in West Virginia, and you're going to Hungary.
Yeah.
Like, what was the culture shock? What was the transition like for that?
It was, it was different. Like, because you're thinking, okay, I'm going to play professional basketball. So I get over there, I walk in the gym, it's people playing handball in the gym, some old people walking around, they set up goals and they play soccer. And I'm like, this ain't professional basketball. Like, this is not what it's supposed to look like. This is not what I'm thinking. They give me a car. It's a, you know, it's a manual. I can't drive it. I'm, you know, stalling out in the middle of the road. All the Hungarians are yelling at me. Then I go grocery shopping. I'm trying to find some salt. I pick up sugar. It's just all these other things that you're not thinking of. So the adjustment is different. And I have some Americans on my team, but they're older. You know, they got families. You know, they're my age now, still playing in Hungary. And, you know, it was an adjustment. And I didn't appreciate it enough until it was almost time for me to leave. I didn't have the mindset that I do now of, okay, being flexible, being adaptable. And, you know, I enjoyed my time there. But looking back on it, I could have done some, you know, done some things better to, you know, embrace myself in their culture.
How was the basketball, like, to the quality of the play?
Yeah, the basketball, I mean, it was good. I thought the basketball was good. It was a league where you had really good rookies or really good veterans. Like, it's guys on the back end of their career getting ready to retire or young rookies trying to make it. So I thought it was a really good starter league. And, you know, I still keep in touch with a lot of my teammates on that team.
What's the, you talked about shopping and stuff like that. What's like the nightlife, the entertainment like in Hungary? What was it? Was it good? Was it hard to adjust to?
Yeah, well, I was in a small town. Like, it was basically a village, Pox, Hungary. So it was not much going on. And I was like an hour and a half, 2 hours from Budapest. And so I remember the first time, you know, I'm going to Budapest and I think it's New Year's Eve or whatever. And so we're going there. And over there, when you're driving, you have to pull off, like, the toll roads here, you know, you drive through them, you pay there. Over there, you have to, you know, pull off on the side of the road, get some, you know, get the easy pass, like, and then make sure if you get pulled over, okay, now the cop sees that you got it. So I didn't know all that, so I'm just driving. The cop pulls me over, and he's trying to, like, talk to me in Hungarian, and I don't know what he's saying, so I had to call the general manager of the team, and he's trying to explain to me what's going on. Then I'm sitting there for maybe an hour, and I have my lights on. The cop pulls off, and we're sitting there, and my battery goes dead. So I'm struggling. So then I call one of my teammates. He picks us up. We end up going to Budapest for New Year. So it's just a whole bunch of stuff that you're not prepared for that you don't know. So you got to learn a whole different culture. But what has helped me with is when I have foreign players come over here, and I know they're trying to get adjusted. So I'm like, all the stuff I went through as a player, I understand what they're going through. So it's, you know, the empathy side of when I played there, how they're going through things here.
The injury was your knee?
Yep.
What was it? Because I've talked to a lot of guys who have played overseas. Yeah. Things can get weird once you get injured. A lot of teams can completely lose interest in you immediately. Oh, yeah. And like you're now a burden and we're not interested. What was it like for you?
For me, it was because I could have had the surgery over there. And the MRI, it was on some old machine. I sent it back home. my doctor at home was like, I really can't read this. Like, because they were trying to say it was ACL and it wasn't ACL. And I just told the team, I'm like, hey, just send me home. I'm not doing the surgery over here. Like, the hospital I was at looked like the hospital out of the movie Saw. And I was like, I'm not doing it here. So I came home and I did the surgery at home. And so I didn't realize that the team will pay for your surgeries and, you know, recovery and all that stuff only if you have the surgery there. So I had the surgery in the States. I had like temporary insurance, you know, just over the summertime in case something happened. So my temporary insurance didn't cover professional athletes. So then I had to pay out of pocket. And I'm like, okay, so the little bit of money I made over the time there all went to my surgery. Then I ended up having two knee surgeries. So went to my surgery. So now I'm like, okay, I had these surgeries. Now I don't have any money. So I'm like, okay, what do I do now? So then that's when I moved back to Morgantown. And I was living on my teammate's couch. And I was parking cars at the local hotel and just to make money. And at the same time, I was rehabbing, thinking I could still play. And that's when, you know, Bob Huggins said, hey, I have a grad assistant spot coming open in a few months. If you want to get into coaching, it's yours. But you got to let me know. So, you know, I contemplated that, went back and forth for a few months, and I always feel like athletes die twice. Like, you know, the first one is life after your sport. And it's like, I don't know who I am. You know, you're tied up into that's being your identity. So struggle with that. Then once, you know, I made the decision to be a grad assistant, like I felt like that was, okay, my new purpose.
Did you feel like you were good at coaching at first?
No. Well, I felt like I was good. I felt like I was good. But my first boss, Dave Beasel, I started at NKU. And that first year we were Division II. And the next year we transitioned to Division I. And he gave me the best advice. And I would give this, I give this advice to all guys that are coming out of playing in the coaching. He said, just because you're a good player, don't expect players to know what you know or be able to do what you did. And that was like the best advice I got transitioning into, you know, coaching.
No, because I think that's a giant hurdle, because I'm sure things come easy to you that you don't even really realize you're very good at.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, why can't you do that?
Yeah.
Just
just do this.
Just use the right hand. Yeah. What are you trying to make it?
Exactly.
And that's, I think that's why a lot, I think, really good players struggle, with coaching, because they can't disconnect that.
Yeah.
So what was it like? You talk about athletes die twice. Like, how long did it take you to really come to grips that your basketball playing days, as you knew them, were done?
This is where it really stuck out to me, because you think about it. I told you I was parking cars at a local hotel, the nicest hotel in Morgantown. So who are you running into? You're running into donors. You're running into fans. You're running in, like, football games. Okay, I'm parking people's cars. So it was I'm living on my teammate's couch, who's a walk-on, who me and him are really close. I was a starting point guard at West Virginia the year before. And now, like, I'm running, well, I'm hobbling because my knee ain't right. So I'm hobbling down to, you know, park people's cars. And for me, everybody's like, man, what are you doing now? I'm like, this is what I'm doing now. So for me, it was just kind of, I had to realize, okay, this is, you know, a lot of people would think they're better than that job or whatever. And it was good for me because it was a way for me to make, you know, quick money. I also had the flexibility to work in the mornings and then go over to the practice facility or the gym in the evening and afternoon and, like, really understand what all goes into college coaching. So for me, it was a blessing. You know, I remember, like, one of the donors hooked me up with that job, so I had flexibility. But it was really hard, you know, trying to understand I'm not Darius Nichols, the basketball player anymore, you know. And that's something that a lot of guys struggle with. And I tell my story to help, you know, my guys when that time comes.
Was that year, not necessarily calendar year, but the experience in Hungary dealing with the injury, that transitioning to coaches, like, that's kind of like a watershed year in your life, I would imagine, no?
Yeah, because it happened fast. It happened fast. Like, a lot of times you think that in your career, especially playing, you think, okay, I'm going to gradually see myself, you know, phasing out. Like, I got time to prepare. I'm like, okay, now I'm getting old. This is the year. But mine happened, like, my injury. It's like, okay, I'm rehabbing. My body don't feel right. So then I had to make a decision quicker than most people do. I mean, I played 6 months professionally. So most people, it's year 10. Now I'm going to shut it down. So they mentally prepare themselves for it.
So when you get that opportunity as a grad assistant, are you now coaching players that you were playing with?
Yes.
How tough was that? Because I would imagine, I think it's one thing if you do it at a different school. Mm-hmm. You're still young, but you're kind of a new face. To do it with guys that I'm sure you were partying with at some point, or at least were in the group with, and now you're the one telling them, hey, stop that or do this. How difficult was that?
Yeah, well, see, that was the days when grad assistants couldn't be on the court. So I really, you know, I really wasn't, like, I was more off the court. I was more behind the scenes. I was doing most of the film work, which was good for me because it taught me how to, you know, cut the film, all that stuff, like, from the ground up. So I really wasn't on the court telling them, you need to do this, you need to do that. So it was good for me. I was doing everything. I was doing store runs. I was doing managerial work. It's funny because, you know, Hugs, he dips tobacco. So my job was to always make sure he had, like, his dip cans, like, during practice or whenever. So, like, I would come home and I would forget and have all these dip cans in my pocket and stuff. And I'm like, why the heck? So, like, I was doing everything. You know, I was making store runs. So it was good. I got to see how to run a program from the ground up.
You mentioned Northern Kentucky. I think Wofford, La Tech had a nice run at Florida. Yeah. When along the path did you feel like you really started to get your arms around what it meant to be a basketball coach? Like, when do you really feel like you started to hit your stride in understanding how you could contribute what buttons to push and stuff like that. Did it take a couple of years or was it pretty quick?
It was pretty quick. I think when I was at Wofford, because when I was at Northern Kentucky, it's funny, I was talking about, you know, me as a player being able, thinking that they can do what I could do. So when I was at Northern Kentucky, I was still young and I could still play. I was on the scout team as an assistant. And so, you know, I'd be scoring on those guys, talking trash. And then I'm thinking, I'm like, hey, if I'm beating these guys and I got bad knees and, you know, can barely move anymore, I got to recruit better players. So I always tell them now. And then one of our guys that was on that team is Ethan Faulkner, who's now at Youngstown State as the head coach. So I'm getting to that age now where I'm starting to see my guys having success that I coached or recruited. But I think when I made the move to Wofford had a bad year the year before. The whole new staff came in, and we just turned the program around in 1 year, and we went to the NCAA tournament. And it took a lot of, you know, mentoring, and we had a really good player in Carl Cochran, but he just had to buy into the team. And so he was kind of like my project of, okay, if I can reach this guy, I think we'll be really good. And it took a while, and towards the second half of the season, I felt like we reached him. He went on a run, and, you know, we ended up going to the NCAA tournament.
When along your path as an assistant, do you start to think you're ready for your own program?
Never.
Really? Never. Okay. Really?
I mean, it's one of those things, like, you always, as an assistant, you always think you're ready. Like, so when I was at Florida, early on, I kept getting other offers to go to other schools as an assistant. And then we start having more success. Now, like, okay, I'm interviewing for these head jobs, and I'm like, okay, people keep calling me. I must be doing something right. You know, I got turned down 7 times, you know, for head coaching jobs before I got the opportunity at Radford. And, I mean, you always think you're ready. You know, you think, okay, I think I can do this. But knowing what I know now, if I knew that then, yeah, well, I would have been better. But that's with everything. You know, that's with everything. And then, you know, got the opportunity at Radford, and, you know, it was challenging. So I don't know. I just think that being an assistant at every level, you know, I've been a grad assistant. I've been at a D2, low major, worked my way up. And just seeing it that way was more beneficial for me than just getting thrown into it.
Given all your experience and different roles as an assistant, when you finally do take over as a head coach,
yeah,
did anything surprise you? Like, that came across your desk? And I don't mean like an individual kid's situation, yeah, but just like something that, oh, I didn't realize that's a box, yeah, I'm going to have to check.
The biggest thing that surprised me was how people talk to you different. And it's kind of weird. You know, like, as an assistant coach, you're walking through the building and it's like, hey, what's up, coach? Like, and then, like, as a head coach, like, everybody's like on pins and, hey, what's up, coach? And, like, the room stops when you walk in there. And that was really uncomfortable for me, especially coming from an assistant. Like, I remember when I got to Radford, we were on the road, and it was, you know, the night before, you know, film, we're just hanging out, you know, everybody's talking, everybody's laughing, joking. And so I called one of my players, his name's Brian Hart. I said, hey, B-Hart, come here. And the room got quiet. And I'm like, that's awkward. Because as an assistant, I could do that and nobody skips a beat. So I called B-Hart over, and the room got quiet. And I was like, so I said, hey, I told everybody, I said, 7 months ago when I was assistant at Florida and I did that, nobody skipped a beat. I said, how come when I call one of y'all over, it all gets quiet like I'm the principal or like you did something wrong? I said, don't treat me like that. So that's the thing I had to get used to, was just how people view you and how powerful your words or whatever your actions can be. So that took some adjusting to do to me.
As a coach, do you prefer games or practice?
Practice. Practice. I love practice. You know, practice to me is fun. The games, a lot of people think, like, for me, like, the games are kind of relaxing to me. Like, game day is relaxing, like, because everybody doesn't want to bother you. So I'm like, that's the day where I can get a lot of stuff done. A lot of the prep work is done. So for me, that's the light day.
Favorite part of the job, coaching in general?
Favorite part of the job is seeing guys get better. Seeing guys get better. I think it's hard now to see a guy all the way through. You don't see guys from freshman year to senior year. So now if you have a guy for 7-8 months, just seeing them get better in all areas.
Darris Nichols, this was great. Thanks so much, and welcome to Philadelphia. Looking forward to watching you.
Yeah, appreciate you.
And
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank new head men's basketball coach at LaSalle University, Darris Nichols, for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.